I guess my opening question is, you know, the political implications of these food crises, do we understand them well in our part of the world? Because we're not used to them, so-called. I mean, we might be going through one, but we're not used to them here because of this kind of decades of policy that have been implemented here and all the other things that we've gone about into your previous episodes. But like, the explanation for a political crisis in other countries often sort of gets simplified into this thing called food riots. Based on your knowledge of like the Tunisian example, like, how much is this simplified? How much of this is kind of true or garbage or whatever?
Well, in the Tunisian example, the way the revolution started was not a food riot, right? The way the revolution started was related intimately to the agro-export model of Tunisia, right? Now, this is something that my colleague Habib Ayeb and one of his former students, Matilda Fatras, did a lot of work on, that Sidi Bouzid, which is the so-called birthplace of the Arab Spring, was a region of major agricultural modernization and investment throughout the decade preceding the Tunisian uprising. And it got to the point where, first of all, land prices were absolutely through the roof, which meant that if you had land, then you actually need to orient to commodity export or at least selling your commodities on the local market. You need to, you know, it has to be heavily capitalized operation because if you don't own the land and you're buying the land, right, then you need immediately to have a swift turnover and be able to turn it into a flow of capital, right? So this means massive infrastructural investments, which means massive debt and so forth, right? And especially this occurred through intensive irrigation infrastructure, basically drawing on very often on non-renewable on human time scales, fossil aquifers, which are distinct from the kind of renewable aquifers. Now, what does all this mean? This means that, first of all, there were actually mass suicides in Sidi Bouzid in the year before Mohamed Bouazizi lit himself on fire and died, right? Mohamed Bouazizi, the so-called spark that lit the Arab Spring. There were many suicides. They just occurred in silence, right? Actually, there have been many, many suicides from the center of the country over the last 10 years. Nobody talks about them, right? People are actually murdered by the economic policies that have been imposed upon Tunisia by the international institutions. It's a form of economic massacre. But of course, no one's calling for humanitarian intervention to go into Tunisia to fix them, right? Of course not. Because they're actually the responsible parties are very often, of course, the Tunisian ruling class, and then behind them, the IMF, the US, and so forth, France. Now, what this means is that there was actually a production side problem, right? So to call it food riots is a huge simplification of what actually happened. You actually had a crisis of people inserted in a subordinate and immiserating way into the production process. And especially Mohamed Bouazizi was a former farm worker that actually ended up being a peddler and was massively indebted to the bank and so forth. And this is why he ended up killing himself, because of a process of economic immiseration that then converted it into a kind of denial of dignity, right? Now, this is a much more complicated scenario than simply saying that there were crises of bread prices and wheat prices and so forth, which there were, although those had peaked in 2008, right? There was actually a crisis related to, intimately linked to the local productive structure, right? Specifically, its agro-export and agro-industrial aspects. Right, this was the major crisis occurring in Tunisia. That was the proximate factor which led to the series of the social crisis in Sidi Bouzid, which then led to this so-called Arab Spring. Which the Arab Spring, of course, was in Tunisia itself was primarily a peripheral phenomenon in the peripheries of Tunisia. Until then, it finally made its way into Tunis in the later periods. Now. So when we talk about the food price crisis, I mean, this is attractive, first of all, because it's legible, right? Everyone is, at least in a limited sense, everyone is eating food, but people don't very much think about producing food. In fact, the agrarian question and questions of how the food that Americans, for example, eat or Canadians eat, this whole question is really suppressed in a lot of the discussion. Like people are like, well, we don't have an agrarian question, or we don't have to worry about food, or we have no food issue and so forth. It's like, well, actually, no, like that's because you rely on poorly paid Mexican immigrants or Haitian immigrants, often in the case of Canada, for example, who have been totally devastated and destroyed by I was about to say NATO, but NAFTA, what's the difference? Policies, right? That have totally immiserated the Haitian and the Mexican countryside, carried out a process of primitive accumulation, separating peasants from the land, or creating massive economic pressures that actually created this free-floating labor force that then is available to be, first of all, an agricultural proletariat in the United States, or in, also Baja California, which is one of the also a major producer for fruit and vegetable crops, which go to the United States, for example. And second of all, that you also that occurs on a larger scale in the sense that you have a larger agro-export orientation across the global south of producing fruits, vegetables, also producing things like coffee, spices, that actually is unimaginable to actually have life in the global north without those things. I mean, if you suddenly, imagine if you suddenly told people in the global north, okay, yeah, you can eat what you grow here. So you're going to get milk, you're going to get white potatoes, and you're going to get carrots, and you're going to get some beef, and you're going to get green revolution wheat that's doused in Monsanto pesticides and fertilizers and other carcinogenic agents, right? I don't even know if people would register that, right? People would be like, huh? Like, I don't think people could register that the fruits and the types of consumption baskets, the types of things people are used to consuming in the global north on a regular basis, are in fact intimately linked to an overall system of primitive accumulation, mass dispossession, labor reservoirs, misery, income deflation throughout the global south, right? Including in places like Tunisia, that then also produces a further aspect, which is related to the agro-export orientation, which then, of course, it becomes another mechanism of income deflation, primitive accumulation, for example, because the land is mortgaged and is the guarantee for the loan. And when the operation goes belly up, then the bank can repossess the land and so forth, right? And then you have a massive deepening agrarian crisis. And the agrarian crisis is more or less permanent across the global south, except during the neo-developmentalist period, which immediately follow decolonization across like Africa and also Asia, right? With all the lights and shadows of that period. So this is to say that when we talk about the Arab Spring as related to kind of bread riots, there's an important aspect there. And in fact, that important aspect is part of the social history and the political history and people's emotional and familial and personal histories of that moment should not be undermined at all. In fact, it's very important, right? People are confronted with this fact that the social compact, which had been linked to access to bread as a symbol and actual the physical substance of feeding themselves, or in technical terms, social reproduction, when prices for that went go up and it suddenly becomes less available, people perceive that, of course, as an assault on their right to dignity, which includes the dignity of living a decent life that the state was supposed to provide. This is part of the post-colonial authoritarian social pact in a country like Tunisia, right? And was continued, in fact, by Ben Ali in after Bourguiba in a more limited way. Now, so these are very important, right? But it's also presented in a very superficial way, which both reflects but also contributes to people's in the North lack of knowledge of the centrality of the agrarian question to the process of accumulation on a world scale. And of course, just their day-to-day lives, right? They're just, it's not even legible. It cannot even be seen. So of course, you see the consequences of this playing out in the current moment, where suddenly it's like, oh, there's somehow something Ukraine and they grow wheat there, Russia too, it's being exported. What's going on, et cetera? So, that in a nutshell are the dynamics related, especially to Tunisia and the Arab Spring that you asked about.